No.
What's your least favorite scary movie?
Piranha.
Welcome to What's Your Least Favorite Scary Movie, the podcast where we talk about the good, the bad, the ugly, and the absurd in all of our favorite
and least favorite
scary movies.
Because we believe every horror movie rightfully has its fan base.
Even if we don't always get it.
My name is Travis.
My name's Jesse, and guess what? It's time to go back to Saw, and this time we're talking about Saw 6.
Yeah!
Yay! That also means if you are a budget tier patron coming at you some point within the next week or so, is going to be January's bonus episode covering season one of Scream Queens. No, not that Scream Queens. I'm talking about the VH1 competition reality TV show that gave a breakout role to one, what is it, aspiring? That's the word I'm looking for. One aspiring actress in Saw 6.
That's right. What a breakout role it was, too.
Better than the winner of season two.
Yeah, she got a better deal in this one, that's for sure.
I think that's it for my announcements, which means it's time for poll results, Travis.
Poll results, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay. So last week, we talked about ATM, the 2012 movie starring Josh Peck. So we wanted to ask you guys, okay, the scenario of the movie, basically someone is standing outside the ATM menacingly. How do you react? You either fight about who's responsible amongst yourselves, die by freezing or break your neck, or bribe them. So on Instagram, 20% would die by freezing and breaking their neck, 80% would bribe them, and then 100% would bribe them on Twitter.
Okay.
So bribing is the way to go. Although if you watch the movie, that's not really going to do anything for you.
Yeah. Well, in this scenario, we're assuming we haven't watched the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't matter. Like, that movie, you're set up to fail no matter what. You're going to die or you're going to be arrested for something. Well, never mind. He did actually commit a murder in that movie.
That
so he kind of did deserve some jail time. Yeah, I would bribe. I would go with the bribe route, too.
I would definitely freeze to death. And I also just want to point out, because we said that we would forgive a lot of their lapse in judgments due to how cold it was.
Yeah.
And it did reach about 5 degrees Fahrenheit, and that was without wind chill.
Yeah.
With wind chill, it was even colder, so we weren't even at the full -5 degrees that they were experiencing in the movie. And just walking from my car into the house, I was so fucking angry and grumpy, and I couldn't think about anything else other than what bullshit it is to be that cold. So... yeah.
It was kind of nice, though, having that line up with whenever we released that episode. Because
was it nice?
It was nice in a way. Like, it let me get into that headspace and experience what type of temperature they were experiencing. I liked it. I mean, I don't like that cold, but like that was like one positive takeaway from the cold that's been going on lately.
I didn't need it.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Enough of that. It's time for Saw 6.
Yeah, Saw 6, baby.
All right. Saw 6 released October 23rd, 2009. We watched it on our DVD. Very special DVD. Once again, I have to talk about it because it came from one of the last surviving Blockbusters.
Yeah. They are very special to us.
Yes. My mom gifted those as the Blockbuster was closing. She found a bunch of DVDs and was like, here you go. If you do not own it on DVD, what are you doing? $5 bin at Walmart. I know we say this every time, but $5 bin at Walmart. But you can currently, as of today, stream it on Prime or YouTube TV Plus, or you can rent it from Google Play or Vudu.
Okay.
Written by Patrick Melton and Marcus Dunstan. Directed by, I believe it's pronounced Kevin Greider. Music by Charlie Clouser. Special effects makeup by Jason Deathridge and prosthetic work done by Patrick Baxter, Damon Bishop, Francois Dejeuner, and Kyle Glencross. Starring Tobin Bell as Jigsaw or John, Costas Mandalore as Hoffman, Mark Rolston as Erickson, Betsy Russell as Jill, Shawnee Smith as Amanda, Peter Outerbridge as William Easton, Athena Karkavas as Agent Perez, Samantha LaMole as Pamela Jenkins, and Tanedra Howard in her breakout role as Simone. That character is named. I was waiting for it. Didn't happen movie, but it's on IMDb.
Okay, because, well, she does come back in a brief appearance later on down the line, but I wrote her down as Tanedra in my notes the entire time.
Yep, that's what she got as well. Okay, Travis, time for our favorite game.
Budget or Bucked.
Hey, high five. We did good that
boom,
time.
High five. We fucking killed it. This is budget for sure.
It is budget.
Yeah.
It is budget. It is $11
million. Wow.
Opening box office of $14 million and a worldwide gross of $68
million. That's like a... That's a dive down from where it had been, right? I mean, that's still really good for a Saw movie, but like... Well, I guess for a Saw movie, it's not really anywhere as big as the others.
Yeah. Again, I'll be talking about that momentarily.
Okay.
It currently has a 6.0 out of 10 on IMDb.
That's fitting.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a rude score, but I do like the symmetry of it all.
Yeah,
Saw
6.
Okay. My theme this week for 2009 horror movies to compare scores and budgets.
Okay.
Is upsetting movies.
Upsetting
movies. Upsetting.
Ooh, okay. I'm curious to see what fits into that.
The first one is The Human Centipede.
Oh my God. That one is less so upsetting. The second one, when we first started dating, we watched the second one and we had to turn it off halfway through because it upset us too much.
Yeah, it upset you too much.
Do you think you could have, like, you could hang with it?
No, you were sitting there. You were like, I really don't feel comfortable watching this with you. I think you were worried I was going to, like, break up with you if we went through the whole movie together.
Well, our relationship started by talking about bad horror movies. So
Troll 2,
okay,
baby.
Yeah, Troll 2. And then we went to Human Centipede 2 and I was like, oh, too far, too far.
So that premiered at the London Fantastic Film Festival on August 30th, 2009. It had a budget of 1.5 million euros, which was not converted, but the worldwide gross was converted to $325,000.
Dang, that's about right, actually.
IMDb score of 4.4 out of 10.
That's also about right.
Second movie. Antichrist.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I'm afraid to watch that one.
I'm afraid to watch that one. I've read enough about it that I'm like, am I ready to be bummed out?
There's a list of movies where I only read the Wikipedia description, and that movie's on that list. Mm-hmm.
That premiered May 20th, 2009. It had a budget of $11 million, so comparable to Saw 6, a worldwide gross of $7.4 million. And an IMDb score of 6.5 out of 10.
Oh, it's almost right there with Saw 6.
Yep.
Those two are neck and neck that year.
And then the third movie is Splice.
Oh, wow. That was 2009?
Yeah.
For some reason, that feels like an early 2000s movie.
I saw it in theaters, and then I watched it one other time with you. And
you
that
made
movie,
me watch it.
Yeah, because I can live a life with you knowing that imagery was in my head and not in your head. It's an upsetting movie, more than I can succinctly describe right now.
I think I remember that day we were at FYE and I picked up Halloween 6 the producer's cut and you're like, oh wait, there's also Splice. And I didn't know what that was. I was like, no, you gotta watch this.
We both upset each other with our movie picks that day.
Yeah.
So that premiered at the Sitges International Festival of Fantastic and Horror Cinema.
Wow.
On October 6, 2009, had a budget of $30 million and a worldwide gross of $27
million. Ooh, that is a very effects-heavy movie.
Yeah. And an IMDb score of 5.8 out of 10.
Damn. So they were all pretty much, well, other than Human Centipede, up there around the six area.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I got taglines.
How many?
I've got four taglines.
Okay, that's pretty good. There should have been six, but
you know, it is what it is. They did better than they did with five and The Collector.
They don't have the staple tagline this time around? If it's Halloween, it's Saw?
Nope.
Wow, okay.
The one that's on the poster is, "He helped me."
He helped me. Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's what Shawnee Smith tells
Jill.
Betsy Russell, yeah.
Yeah, I remember that part, yeah. That's a weird choice for a tagline, but okay.
The game comes full circle.
Now, that one has the poster of the carousel, which that makes sense with that image because it's going in a circle also.
Also, Jill putting the reverse bear trap on Costas.
That's true. Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Six chances, six lessons, six choices.
Six, six, six.
Look, I get it. It's the sixth movie, but there's not six games in it. I don't like.
No, there's not. There's like four, right?
Yeah.
Maybe if you count Kosis.
But then that's still five.
And then...
the one at the beginning? Okay, maybe. I guess technically we're at six, but it's not for the same person, so I feel like it doesn't count.
No, I don't think it counts either.
Trust in him.
Trust in him. Who, Jigsaw?
I think so. It's capitalized. Maybe they mean God.
Him. Well, Jigsaw probably thinks he is God, honestly.
You know for sure that, like, he is, like, on the Reddit, like, the atheist forums.
Oh, yeah, dude. He's, like, the type of people that shits on you for being, like, somewhat religious.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, I got some fun facts.
Okay.
This is actually Greuter's directorial debut. Oh. He was an editor for the previous five Saw movies.
Okay, because the name was very familiar. Mm-hmm. All right.
This was filmed in Toronto, so you're...
I told Jesse last night, you know how I know this was made in Canada.
And it's because the mom is a...
she's a the cop from Trailer Park
yeah,
Boys.
Yeah, briefly has a fling with Julian.
Yeah.
It was filmed from March 30th until May 2009.
Wow, holy shit, down to the wire. Yeah,
absolutely. It is the lowest growing film in the franchise at the time.
Wow, so others have done worse.
Yes.
Wow.
The original script planning suggested that Costas's character might target the mafia, but they ended up dismissing that as a more Punisher and less Saw.
Oh, God. Wow. What the? That would have been a wild fucking movie.
I like the story we ended up getting, but yeah.
That's like an alternate universe right there. Like, you can explore that in like a potential sequel.
So Lionsgate told Greuter 1 week before they started filming that the movie would be post-converted to 3D, which he was really upset about because everything he'd planned was like meant for a 2D visual, but they ended up scrapping that plan because they didn't have enough time.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like it was very last minute to begin with.
Yeah.
Obviously, they did that for seven.
Yeah. Costas said about his character, "That's my character's dilemma. Does he go fucking crazy or follow the rules of the boss?"
I love it. I love Costas. We'll go into him in a little bit, but I love Costas' trajectory in this movie.
So it was apparently exciting news that Shawnee Smith was going to be back because in 4 and 5, all of the flashback sequences involving her were from archival footage. So all of the new flashbacks in this movie were actually filmed for the movie. So
I feel like this, maybe the Scream Queens thing also led up to that since she was so
involved.
She's like,
I'm not going to give somebody a role in the movie and then not be in the movie.
Yeah, and I want my breakout role too.
So he wanted to have both a horror and a thriller vibe with the games and everything that's involved. He wanted it to be, you know, kind of like you're on a roller coaster and you got the stops and starts and you're wondering what's going to happen. And he also wanted to make sure that the games were more personal because he felt that in 4 and 5, they were like much bigger and broader.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And this one, like, and if you think about it, it really is up close and personal for William for all of the games that he has to play because he is literally making these choices.
Yeah. Like people that he knows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then originally they had 10 people on the carousel.
Whoa. How many people are there?
Six.
Six.
They cut it down to that one just to, you know, not spend, because this was already the longest trap to date. If you don't count, like, you know, the original bathroom trap and everything. And
I guess it is.
So it was already the longest one they had. And also they wanted to mirror, you know, the six in the title.
I like it, though. It also means they have to construct, like, a bigger carousel.
Yeah, so. But they also said, like, the steam room is, like, the most elaborate set they've ever had. They all really loved that one. They thought it was really cool because it's, such a big maze. We've got all these pyrotechnics and everything going on. Yeah,
it's, like, multi-level because you got William up there up top. He has his own little area, too. It is kind of nice. I like it.
Yeah. So... them's my fun facts.
Them's good facts.
Yeah.
I like them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a good time with it. So now it's time for us to have a good time and talk about this movie.
Yeah. Okay. Time to do the good, bad, ugly, and absurd, starting with the good.
Yep.
Okay. I'll start it off. Okay. So I know that they were going to do the mafia, but I like the direction they went with this one, attacking the insurance companies.
Yeah.
It sucks. Like, you know, the way that they do this stuff, they have to, like, deny people that have pre-existing conditions. Mm-hmm. It's a very predatory business. I thought it was very fitting for them to tackle that in the Saw franchise, especially considering John Kramer's whole dilemma.
I also think it was really smart that they had William develop that formula that they use. So that way it's not even just, you can't even hand wave it away and be like, oh, well, he's just, you know, doing his job. Like, he actively came up with this formula that's denying
people. And he is so proud of it, too. Yeah. Whenever John asks him, like, okay, about it. Yeah, who came up with that? He just, like, taps himself, like, me.
Yeah.
I did.
Yeah.
Yep. So
I did that in between the perfect finger waves in my hair.
Yeah. But yeah, I liked it. I thought that was like a really great one to focus on. I thought the traps were very inventive this time around because mm-hmm. I think once you put it into words about it being more personal, I think that's what it was for me, because thinking of the past few, they were just very weird. Like, they weren't bad, but like pipe bombs and you have to hide in like the little tunnels to survive. Okay, whatever. And then like,
and you're with strangers, and honestly, figuring out what their connection was wasn't even important to solving the game.
Yeah, and it goes on for so long that it's just like, I don't really care that much about it. But here, seeing him having to make these tough decisions, try that formula himself, and it just like, see how it impacts him, and he realizes the way he's doing to other people, I, you know, it's just so much better.
I also kind of really love that it's almost like a logical fallacy in the argument. You know, like if you have debates with people and they'd be like, oh, well, so if you had two people standing in front of you and you have to shoot one of them, who are you shooting? And he's like, this isn't how my decisions are made. It's just math. I don't pick and choose personally who gets to do what.
Yeah, and John's like, math. Okay, well, I'm going like, to change that.
Yeah, he's like, time for you to learn.
There's so many quotable lines in this movie.
I love it.
The dialogue is great in this movie.
Yes.
I don't think we'll ever hear a better line other than Piranha in the Saw franchise.
I'm going to be really honest, though. I was torn between doing that and doing the one guy's tirade at the end. You look at me when you're killing me.
That's the other one, because we say that to each other all the time.
All the time.
Like, look at me.
Yeah, really, like I'll be like, you look at me when you're dropping my drink on the ground.
It's so great. They're like minor characters, but they stand out. They have awesome.
Jigsaw
roles.
Is not a minor character.
Well, no, but that guy is.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's not. But like that right there, yeah. Like the whole thing with the carousel, I fucking love it. Yeah. The dog pit, I love it.
Yes.
The characters are great too in this suit.
Oh, absolutely.
And I love Hoffman's, like, his going full slasher in the end. I like how this is the transition to Hoffman going fucking crazy.
Yes.
Like, right here, the very end of this movie sets it up in part seven. In part seven, they ride that and they do a great job with it. Mm-hmm. But the whole ending sequence of him when they are pinning him with the voice, and you can see him kind of like making calculating moves around that room.
Yeah.
He's like, okay, I'm going to get some coffee.
Going to get the coffee. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Like, it's just so
cool. He kept
cool.
his gloves on the whole time.
Yeah, exactly. And then, like, right whenever his voice is recognizable, just like, psh, just like slash and just kill everybody in like 5 seconds.
And it's great that they were able to create that tension, because we already knew. You know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
We already knew he was involved. So the fact that they could still create tension in this scene, I think, is a really good example of how well done this movie is.
Yeah, and it had great payoff, too.
Yeah.
All right. Those are my goods.
Yeah, no, this is, I'm gonna say probably like my favorite in the franchise.
Yeah, man, it's like up there for me too.
It's really good. It's really fun. It's like watching it this last time, taking notes with it, I was like, there's a lot of really good moments with it. Like at the beginning when Tanindra's like cutting off her arm, the music lines up with it so well. It's
like,
really awesome, because like, boom!
Yeah, where like everything stops, like no sound, and it's just like you have to like sit there and watch that shit for just a second. It makes it way more impactful.
Yeah, I think the insurance angle is something that's really relatable to a lot of people. I am very fortunate that my job provides excellent insurance, but I have a lot of anger towards general insurance due to some stuff that's been going on lately.
Yeah.
Just seeing some of the bullshit calls that can happen just because, like, oh, well, that's just, you know, that's just what the policy is.
We've said it before, but this would be a different movie if everything operated the same way as pet insurance does.
Right?
Like, because pet insurance is fucking amazing. It covers anything.
Yeah. 1 year ago today, on the day that we're recording it, we picked Talia up from, like, a major surgery. And the insurance paid half of it, which is the coverage I had elected with it.
Yeah.
Makes me wish I'd picked the 70% option, but it's fine.
Yeah, it's okay. We did not anticipate that.
We did not think that we were going to have a $7,000 surgery plus six $1,000 chemo treatments, but here we are. It's fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that this movie really hits a lot of good spots. I think there's a bunch of fun, like, ways that they it feels in a lot of ways like a more traditional horror movie in a good way. Because, like, at the beginning, we see all of the characters right there in the office just milling around. We're being introduced to them in a way that we don't always get in a Saw movie, which I kind of appreciated.
You know what? You're right. Because a lot of the times it just starts with the person in the trap and then you're given their background from there. But yeah, you're right. I like this approach a lot better, too.
Yeah. And I think also going back to the whole personal thing, Simone and Eddie's trap, I think, is also something that a lot of people have experienced because they give these loans to people knowing that with the interest rates and what their income and everything, that they're not going to be able to pay it off and then they're going to repossess everything. And, you know, we've got legal schemes like that out there. I'm just going to call them like that. Think about like payday loans.
Yep.
The interest on those is fucking bananas. I'm also going to throw it out there. School loans.
Yeah, school loans especially.
Those gain interest by the day. That's stupid.
It's ridiculous.
And you're having 18-year-olds sign off on these loans. They don't know what they're doing. Do you know how? Do you remember how stupid you were at 18? I know how stupid I was at 18.
Yeah, I was so stupid.
Yeah, like. So yeah, like I think that they chose a lot of themes that like hit people personally. So it's easy to kind of like, you know, be upset at what's happening, but also at the same time you see the people that are involved as people, you know, like they're cogs in the machine and yeah, they're doing bad things, but also like everybody's that thin line away from like poverty and homelessness and everything. So it's like it becomes this whole moral questioning of like what would you do if you all of a sudden find yourself, you know, you've risen through the ranks in an insurance company and now you're like, I don't feel good about what I'm doing, but also I'm paying my bills. I'm taking care of my parents. I'm taking care of my kids.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, yeah.
So what did you think was bad about this movie, Travis?
Okay. I think the flashback's starting to get a little bit absurd at this point. It's getting confusing. Like, I mean, I think I said it in the last one too, but I think this one especially, because usually with the flashback in the Saw movies, they have different color grading, that way you know that it's a flashback. But
the
sometimes
color grading
in
this one was confusing.
It's all over the place. Yeah. And it's just fucking with my brain. Like, is this present day? Is this in the past? I don't fucking know.
And they said they were trying something different with it. They really liked they had more flesh tones, and that's great and that's awesome. But also, if you're gonna do flashbacks within flashbacks within flashbacks within present day, like, I need something to set it apart.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's the same thing. Like, you've killed off these people, and they are very big parts of the franchise, and you want to keep having them around, but, like, it's kind of starting to hurt them at this point.
Yeah, like, I mean, I understand when I see John or Amanda on screen that it's a flashback, but, like, we had so many flashbacks of Jill.
Yeah, Jill.
But Jill is also still an active participant in this movie.
Yeah, Jill,
like,
and
in
Pamela.
Present time.
Both
yeah.
of them. Like, yes. Yeah, I was like, what the fuck? And then you also have some with Hoffman, and he's also still present. Like, it's just, it gets really confusing, and unless you're not paying, like, 100% attention, you can get very easily lost.
Yeah, if you're not a maniac like the two of us and haven't watched this movie 20 times, it'd be kind of difficult to parse it apart.
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing I had is I felt like the effects took a little bit of a slide down this time. Like, it was like a backseat. I didn't necessarily think that they looked as good as they have in the past.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, we had some good moments, but yeah, I think we didn't get as much gore as we normally really do.
Some of it, I mean, you straight up see William get dissolved at the end of this movie, and it looks okay, but it doesn't look great. And I
think the biggest offender, honestly, is Strom's body at the beginning. We didn't need to see all that. We didn't need to see where some of his guts were actually hoses. Like, that you could have cut that shot. Like, we already saw him dangling from the thing. Just leave it there. Don't let us see the hoses on the ground. We all know that's how you do guts.
You played the flashback from the first one too, and we saw his bones crunching. Like, that was enough.
That was gross. That was awful.
Yeah.
But yeah, don't ruin it by just being like, oh, also here's hoses.
Yeah, exactly. It was, yeah, it's just something I noticed. Like,
which is weird because this is the same like prosthetics crew.
I feel like it seems like they were rushed.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they had a lot less time, it sounds like, to make this one than they had.
And I think
a
lot of the budget also went towards the traps themselves as opposed to like the aftermath of the traps, e.g.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, that was my bad.
Okay. Yeah, I think I mostly agree with all of that. I do. Listen, I love that I love that we get so tropey with this franchise and we get the flashbacks within the flashbacks. It's part of what I love about it. Yeah. But at times it does kind of hurt the pacing because the present storyline is so engaging. You want to spend more time in that world.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And I get that you need to have peaks and valleys. Totally in support of that. I think sometimes the valleys are just a little bit too long.
Yeah.
What's
no, we're in ugly right now.
Oh, ugly. Yeah. Sorry, I skipped right past that.
I got John's vendetta against addicts in this. He's out to get them. He thinks that they are the worst type of people. They can't be cured unless you bring them within inches of death.
And I had this whole rant last night while we were watching it because, like, that's not how addiction works. It literally fucks up your brain chemistry. And then when he was talking about, oh, you need to be close to death to understand it. And I was like, a lot of people with addiction issues probably have been up close with death. Like, yeah. It's probably not like a new thing for them to experience.
Surely. And he's just telling Joe, like, these people are going to ruin your business. You shouldn't be working around these types of people.
And her entire business is helping people who do have addiction disorders.
Yeah. It's just really fucking weird. Like, it's a weird take on his part.
I mean, it's in line with who he's been from the very beginning. Think about the first one where he like gets mad at one guy for having depression. Does the same thing with Lynn in the third one. Like, it's completely in line with who John is as a person.
Yeah, he fucking sucks sometimes.
Most of the time. I'm going to go out there and say most of the time.
All right, well, here's another ugly thing about John in this movie that I found. His bald cap was atrocious in this. I could see his fucking, hair under there.
We're trying so hard to, have him sit as still as possible so that way you couldn't tell. That whole scene, it's like, don't, John, stay there in the shadow.
And, you know, the thing is, we're watching this on the lowest quality other than, VHS that we could get. We're watching it on DVD, okay? I can see that shit crystal clear. And that shit is not supposed to be crystal clear. It's supposed to help it be hidden.
He also had his little fucking soul patch in that moment.
Did he have a soul patch?
Right there.
Oh, yeah. That's right. He does have that little
tiny...
This
is a weekend of bad facial hair because we also watch Fast Five and Dwayne Johnson does not have the face for a goatee.
Yeah.
He doesn't. So even as well-groomed as it was, it just doesn't look good on him. And I said it on Twitter and I'm going to say it here now. That was the biggest crime committed in that movie. And that's a movie all about crime.
So much crime in that, yeah. He's a good guy, too. Should have arrested him. Okay, and the other ugly thing is just insurance companies, but we've already talked plenty in depth about that, so
yeah,
we can go on. What's your ugly?
My ugly is really going to be focused on the insurance, and I was just sitting there thinking about it, what if someday I didn't have the insurance that I have now, and I do have a chronic illness and these pre-existing conditions, what would happen to me? What kind of a treatment am I going to get? And then him not disclosing an oral surgery. A lot of places don't even count oral surgeries really as surgeries. Mm. You know what I mean? They don't think of it as a real surgical procedure. Because I went fully under with my wisdom teeth removal. And they don't even really think about that, consider it a surgery, even though it had all of the hallmarks of it.
That scene right there was them. It was just him making the biggest leap. From well, you had this thing here, so obviously that means you're gonna have heart disease.
I mean, it's not a big leap that science is there to back that. It's just kind of shitty the way that policy is written.
I understand it, but that's there have been cases of this being linked to that. Okay, well, that doesn't necessarily mean that was the case. It was a cyst years ago.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know. It's just weird.
It makes me think of Parks and Rec where Leslie says, my insurance denied my coverage when I sprained my wrist because they said having a wrist is a pre-existing condition. that's kind of how it feels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. Now.
Now the absurd.
Absurd moments in this movie. Okay.
Do we just want to go straight into the movie?
Yeah, for sure. The dog pit.
Okay.
I fucking love the dog pit in this movie. Every one of them have like a little standout moment. They all have their time to shine and make their plea to him.
Listen, I think all the time about like horror movie characters and how they would behave on Below Deck. And
do you think about the dog pit?
The dog pit would be my favorite type of charter guest where they're just like those fucking assholes that I was watching earlier. Like, they would be like that, a mixture of them and Erica Rose, and be like, like, all of the drama, like, that I love in trashy reality TV, but I also feel so bad for the people that have to serve them.
It was great. It was kind of like, it was a very condensed, compact version of that, because you got to see the interdepartment drama there. Like, she's fucking lying. She's not pregnant. Your mom is not even, like, you're not even involved in your family's life. I loved it. It was so great. The Trailer Park Boys actor, because, you know, that's a little thing for me, but like it takes me out of it a little bit, but I appreciate it. Like seeing those people in horror movies. We immediately followed it with Would You Rather again. We watched Tricky, and the amount of things that go on within 90 seconds in this movie is insane, because all of these traps are basically 90 seconds long, but you see so much shit go down in this. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, the timing on this one is a little bit weird, because he's got 15 minutes per trap, if you average it out. Mm-hmm. He's got an hour to get through the whole thing, which is not the most egregious timing we've ever had. But yeah, like you said, you have limited time for each one. So it's like, what is he like? Is he just like taking a moment between each, like taking a beat?
Well, that one with the steam room, she has to be all the way at the end within 90 seconds. And then, like, by the time she makes it to the end, like, they kill each other.
The key isn't even there. Yeah, like, that's insane to me, because, like, she had to get all the way through there. And then, oh, hey, bonus game.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's insane.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Also, Hank. Hank, the exchange with Hank is one of my favorite things in this.
Hank fucking hates William Easton.
It's so fucking great.
He hates him.
That scene where he's just like, hey, Hank, and he just like pats him on the chest, and then Hank gives him the worst fucking look. He's like, fuck you guys.
I love it. And we don't really know what Hank's job is, but like...
Janitor.
But when the power goes out, William calls for Hank.
Hank! I don't know. I think he's got...
So I was like, is he a janitor? Is he maintenance? I don't know what he's doing, but like... I don't think William knows what his... Maybe his name's not even Hank.
I think it's a very one-sided relationship. He probably called him Hank one day. That's probably not his name. He bought him a janitor. He's not a janitor. He was actually there, part of the dog pit, but he mistook him for the janitor, so he bought him a janitor's outfit, stitched Hank on there himself. He's like, here you go, Hank. I know you've really been wanting one of these things for a long time now. So like, Hank just kind of became the janitor.
Okay. I like that theory.
Yeah, it's my headcanon right there.
Okay, so you listed a lot of really good absurds, and I'm gonna say that my favorite absurd is at the end, right when Kostas is going on his
rampage,
death trail. Yeah. Uh-huh. And right before that happens, like, they're kind of unwinding all of the evidence they have around him. They're trying to make him feel cornered.
Yeah.
And they say something about how the fingerprints don't have the right, like, oils and stuff to be conducive with life. Basically, the fingerprints were left after he already died.
Yeah.
So Kostas goes on his rampage, and then he goes, and he gets Strom's hand and Lee's Mori fingerprints. And it's like, you were just told, why that doesn't work.
I feel like with him, he's like, okay, these assholes figured it out.
Nobody else knows science.
Like, I didn't even think of that shit. These are the only people that probably would have ever thought of that shit. How much of this do you think was actually Kostas' idea, though?
Well, no, we definitely talked about him surviving the reverse bear trap was a last-minute addition by him. He's like, I'm coming back for part 7, don't worry.
That right there, I feel like, okay, we got, like, we have to release this movie. It goes to theaters tomorrow. Like, we got to film this tonight. And then it's like, okay, Kostas, we just got to get your scene of you dying. And he, like, last second runs to the window bar. It's like, gah! And they're like, God damn it.
That's why in the last one, like, Kostas is never going to be on screen with anybody else, because he, like, forced his hand.
They're like, all right, asshole, you want to be in the 7th movie?
Oh, man, I can't wait to talk about that one.
God, it's going to be so fun. I love it.
Okay, I fucking love this movie. I'm giving it a 9.5.
Oh, that's what I was gonna give it to. Yeah. This is definitely I think the best, like the second best one. It's hard to beat the first one for me. The first one is the
first one is a gem for sure. Yeah,
but like that's kind of the case for most franchises like this. So six definitely takes spot number two.
Yes, absolutely. And I want to add one more good that I thought about as we were talking. I think that Peter Outerbridge does such a good job of like looking ashamed of himself whenever he has to whenever he has to give like bad news. He does actually look like he genuinely feels bad about it, like, but just enough to like have plausible deniability, you know what I mean? Like, he's perfect for this role. He does such a good job.
Like, I don't know if he's like understanding the connection, but like he like probably feels bad. He's like, I'm sorry that I had to kill you. I don't get why, like what point he's trying to make right
now.
Well,
like we see it like at the beginning when he denies Harold and John. Mm-hmm. Like, and he's got like that contrite look, like, oh shucks, it's out of my hands.
Yeah.
And then at the end when he looks at him while he kills him, he's got like that same look, but there's a lot of sincerity behind it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And I think it's real. His acting is superb in this.
That's a good point. He does need some credit for that right there.
Yeah, he plays slimy, but also, like, charming well.
Yeah,
in definitely. The way you have to be a senior vice president of accounts for an insurance company that actually hates fucking providing medical services
that's
for
also
its customers.
An absurd title. Senior vice president of accounts.
Yeah.
Like, that's his fucking title in this. Like, wow. Yeah. That sounds like a bullshit made up. Like,
oh,
he made
my God.
Up his own
he
title.
He would thrive in the MLM market. Like,
oh, yeah.
I could be a senior vice president.
I'm surprised. One of the Saw movies probably has to go for the MLM.
Oh my God, I would love that.
Yeah, that would, I think that would
like
be fitting.
John uses Monet shampoo after his cancer treatment, and instead of saving his hair, it falls out even harder.
Oh yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So we got a 9.5. So
yeah, we got a 9.5. We're ready to go.
Let's talk about it.
We start off. We've got two people in a trap. They've got screws to their head. Simone and Eddie, they're money lenders who count on repossessing people's possessions. They have to basically give their pound of flesh.
So we talked about before, this is Tanedra, the winner of mm-hmm. Scream Queen season one.
Yes.
This is her breakout role here.
Yes.
Do you feel like this is underwhelming for a breakout role?
Yeah, I think they used the phrase breakout role very loosely when filming the show.
I would have been so disappointed if I were her and this is all I get. Just like the opening and a brief conversation with Kostas.
At least she gets to come back in the next one.
That's true, but that wasn't promised.
And the winner of the second one is actually like, she barely gets any lines. So she gets her head squished right away.
Yeah, yeah. It is a little bit worse, but I'm just saying, like, it's crazy that this is the breakout role for Saw 6.
Yeah. You would think that she would be more involved somehow, like a new agent or something.
Right, right. But whatever. She does a good job here.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, yeah.
Yeah. So basically, whoever provides the most flesh tips the scale in their favor gets to go free while the other gets the screws, like, born into their head. And Eddie is a bit beefier.
He's a bigger guy
than Tanedra.
Yeah.
So
I love that shot of him like starting to cut off his fat, and then she like looks at her stomach, and there's nothing there.
I remember when I went to see this with my mom. That was like, she loved that moment. She was like, "That's great."
It's funny. Yeah. She's like, "All right, I gotta cut off my whole fucking arm."
And I like, yeah, because she starts off like she's down at the wrist, and then she goes like midway up, and then she ends up like at the elbow because she was like, "This fat motherfucker."
She's got so much. And that guy's like cutting it off like nobody's business.
Yeah,
too.
He was hungry for it. but yeah, she ends up putting her arm in there at the last second and survives.
Oh God, the chopping too. Like we talked about before. It's just
The music was like hitting with each chop. It was really nice. We flash back to Amanda driving in a car with Cecil.
Mm-hmm.
Then we cut to the end of part five. One of my least favorite things a horror movie can do, but it's fine because we don't linger on it for too long.
The whole redoing the ending of the last movie.
Yes. Yeah. Looking at you.
Friday the 13th.
Friday the 13th.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Kostas undoes the room.
Yeah.
I guess you know he didn't build this room. You know that John built this room.
I don't know. It's hard to tell.
This movie really sets up Hoffman as being stupid.
They kind of do. Like, They okay, yeah, they do. I don't know. Like it's insane though that if he died back in Saw 3, he was able to orchestrate all of these traps for all of these other movies too.
Well, just remember that like the timeline for these movies is pretty quick paced.
Yeah, like, it's like what, like a month or so after Saw 3 here, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not that long. You're right.
So yeah, he pulls back the room and we discover a meat puppet and hoses and fingies. Mm-hmm. That's what I wrote in my notes.
Yep. Poor old Strom just hanging up there dangling.
So we cut to the insurance company. There's lots of phone calls happening. We see the dog pit. We see Hank. We see his file clerk and secretary.
I like the whole introduction to the dog pit, though. I like how the one dude, he's like, ah, Terminator strikes again.
Yeah. So he, William Easton, he's obviously the big boss because he's got the big office. He's on the phone with somebody. He's saying, yeah, sorry, I have to miss dinner tonight. Love you. I'll make it up to you. I got to stay late with legal. Basically, he's got to practice for his deposition.
Yeah.
We get a flashback.
Okay, yeah.
So what happened? It's Harold Abbott was appealing his termed policy. And this is what we're talking about at the beginning, where his policy was terminated. They wouldn't cover his treatment he needed for his heart disease because he didn't disclose the oral surgery he had for a cyst in his mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, you've just given me a death sentence. Then he leaves. And then, yeah, that's when we cut to them because the lawyer... couldn't think of the word for a second. That's when the lawyer is like, how did this error get discovered? And he said, oh, the dog pit. And he cuts to them, you know, like, just discovered an error in application for a chronically ill client. We'll be able to save over $200,000 in his lifetime. And then they like high five. And it's like, the wow, this is again. Gross.
Yeah. And I feel like since that guy's name is the Terminator, he missed an opportunity on the carousel. He's like, but the Terminator will be back.
Yeah.
You got like, he, if you kill me now, he won't come back.
I also just wrote here, Hank hates Will.
Yeah, I wrote Hank over Will's bullshit. It's just the face. He sells it so well. It's just like a fuck you.
I really, now that we've talked about it, I really think that his name is like, maybe he prefers Henry, but William called him Hank one day and everybody else is too afraid to contradict him. So everybody calls him Hank now.
There's something there.
Yeah. So Costas is listening to the tape from the beginning for Simone and Eddie. And then he gets called to that actual scene itself. And they're like, we haven't found the tape. And he looks up and Erickson's there. He goes, I didn't think you got out from behind the desk. And he goes, I do when there's fingerprints on a jigsaw scene. Dun, dun, dun.
Yep. Finds Strom's prints there.
Yeah, he says they're Strom's. He goes, and don't worry. We had one little secret we were keeping from him. And they go back to a back room. And dun, dun, dun. Agent Perez is still alive.
So they were saying that they were keeping Perez secret from Strom.
Yeah, the fact that she survived.
Okay, that's
true. Even though in the fifth one it was implied that like he was in her hospital room when she died, but it's fine.
Best not to think about it.
Yeah. Then we cut to Pamela Jenkins. She is talking to Hoffman, and he calls her a sensationalist, and she says, I'll tone it down if you get me access to Jill Tuck. Speaking of Jill Tuck, she is at home watching home videos of her dead ex-husband and dead baby. And drinking wine and crying and then reading John's last will and testament.
Oh, yeah. You skipped over Tanedra getting questioned by Hoffman.
Oh, my God. I did. I said he talks to Tanedra and victim blames. He's basically, you cut off your own arm, right? He didn't make you. You did it. And she was like, what? He's like, did you learn a lesson? She goes, what am I supposed to learn? I cut off my arm.
Yeah. It's so weird. It's weird watching this movie too, or this scene too, after watching Scream Queens and seeing her act and then seeing her do this scene right here. Like, it's nice seeing her actually in like an actual movie role.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's just like, yeah, he like did it just to like said it was to learn a lesson or something. And the way he's like, well, did you? And then like the way that she reacts to that, like, I feel like it was a reality check to Costas or to Hoffman. It's like, look at my fucking arm. No, yeah. I didn't learn a lesson. I'm just mutilated now. And he's just like, oh, shit. I didn't realize that we're actually just fucking people shit. Up.
Yeah, we are really ruining some lives, aren't we?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So now Jill is drinking and sad, which is not, you don't want to be sad drinking. That's never a good time. she's going through the box and looking at all of these envelopes. She's got six envelopes. And then she gets a call from Pamela Jenkins. She lets it go to voicemail.
Yeah, and then we get like the little flashback to the box that John had left for her in his will. And she opens up one of the envelopes and it's a picture of Pamela.
Yep.
So you realize she's going to be one of the targets now.
So they cut to the morgue. The jigsaw piece that was cut from Eddie was cut with an inferior blade.
Yeah.
God damn it, Hoffman, you've been told.
I love that they used that here. It's like, well, yeah, the blade was only used one other time, and that was the Seth Baxter murder. And it's like, okay, inferior blade right there.
Yeah. And that's the thing. That's what they keep trying to hammer in it with this movie with Hoffman, is that he doesn't listen to constructive criticism at all.
Yeah.
So because they can't find the tape for this particular crime scene, they're going to use the Seth Baxter tape because they figure, okay, well, same blade. You know, maybe it'll be the same voice and we can descramble the voice. So they've got to go try and find that. Hoffman visits Jill and he said, change of plans. The new game starts tonight. And Jill's like, that's not what John wanted. And Costas said, Is John here? No, this is Costas's franchise now.
Costas is Jigsaw.
So, yeah.
Yep, and he's taking control of all aspects, he says.
Yeah, so apparently he said, somebody give me the envelopes. Somebody else is going to have.
Yeah, I guess Jill was supposed to be in charge of. What was she supposed to do? Was she supposed to be the pig napper?
I have no clue what she was supposed to do, but she drops 5 envelopes, which we know for a fact there were 6 because we saw one marked with a 6.
Yeah. So we go.
And then he says, what are these people? And she said, unfinished business.
Yes.
And then we flashback.
Yes. We go to a flashback of John telling Jill
that
the whole attic speech is like, yeah, they're never going to get better. Yeah.
And she's like, no, that's literally not how this science works. He goes, they're just addicted to methadone, which again is not how methadone works.
His quote is like, the addicts are just going to use you and let you down. Like, what do you mean use you? Like, to get better?
Yeah.
What does that even mean? Yeah, in this case,
the
right
thing
here
that she chose to do, a cause she really believes in? John. And then he's like, here's my proof. Here's Amanda. She's definitely not Stockholm syndromed at all.
It's so weird. She was standing there in the corner the entire time, and Jill had no idea. She's just like awkwardly over there in the corner.
And honestly, out of all of the wigs they're going to give Shawnee Smith in this franchise, this isn't the worst.
It's not the best. It's not great.
But it's not the worst.
No, it's not. But I don't think she gets a single good one in the entire series.
There's a steep drop off once we get to Sox.
Yeah, probably. A little bit worse there than here.
Okay.
Will is in the office at night. He's just kind of chilling
storming.
There.
He's watching news reports about Jigsaw and how there's still games happening even though John Kramer is dead, and how it seems like anybody who's ever come into any kind of a contact with John Kramer is being targeted. And Will, in the first watch, it just looks like he's like, wow, that's awful. But on subsequent rewatches, you're like, oh shit, he knows that he's had pretty significant contact with John Kramer.
He's like, oh shit, I actually told this guy that he's gonna die. Like, I'm not gonna help him live.
Yeah, I told him he's gonna die. Even if I help him live, he's still gonna die. I think he's probably not a fan of me.
That last conversation definitely did not go well.
Yeah, I didn't do myself any favors with that.
But suddenly, power cuts out.
And then he goes, Hank!
Hank. Yep. And he sees the silhouette and immediately assumes that it's somebody there to get him.
He shoots the silhouette. It's a security officer. And I don't mean like a police officer in the building. I mean, this man's got a jacket that says security. Will shoots him. He goes, oh no, you're going to be all right. You're wearing a vest, right?
Yeah, oh my God. Yeah.
This man is so fucking out of touch.
You okay? You're okay.
You're fine. But while he's like trying to, you know, provide some life-saving first aid, he gets picknapped. Because, of course.
Yep, it's his turn.
John Kramer was probably like, if the security officer dies, he dies. Wrong place, wrong time. He shouldn't be working for the insurance company.
Yeah. Just a casualty of the business.
So he wakes up in a trap.
I feel like the tapes are more personal too, because he's not doing Billy.
Yeah.
It's like actually him talking to them.
Oh, he wants him to know.
Yeah. He's like, yep, you fucked up big time. You're getting actual John Kramer shame talking to you right now.
He said that the probability formula that he came up with doesn't account for the will to live. You've got 4 traps and 4 straps. basically, if he doesn't complete all of these within the 1 hour time frame, the bombs on his limbs will explode. He can take one off for each trap he successfully defeats. So the first game is he's got to hold his breath against Hank, who's a 52-year-old smoker, and according to his formula, can't breathe for shit.
Yep, pre-existing cigarette condition.
Yep.
Yep, something like that.
And again, you know that John is probably one of those that at some point out in public has taken a cigarette directly out of somebody's mouth.
I can just imagine him, like, anytime he's walking down the street and somebody's smoking, he just slaps it on their hand. I used to do that to my mom. Yeah, just trying to make her feel bad. Now I realize I was kind of an asshole.
So
Hank doesn't do too well, shockingly. But like, so anytime they take a breath, they have these things on their ribs that, yeah, it squeezes into their ribs and like breaks their ribs or whatever.
So we were talking about this while we were watching it, and there's a lot of factors going against Hank here, and it feels almost like this trap is rigged for William to win it, because it looks like their traps are set at the exact same starting position. So Hank's already, because he's also a little beefier than William. Mm-hmm. So he's already got those things digging into him. He's already got the pressure on his ribs and lungs. And then he gets the hardest for squish because he's already got that pressure. And because the shock of the pain causes him to gasp in again and again. It's like one of those, like, once you start drowning, you just keep drowning. That's what's happening with him.
To add insult to injury, Hank pees himself.
They Why did they make him do that? It's like in pieces. Like, they just linger on the pee-pee shot.
Did the actor piss himself accidentally? Did
like
he just pee?
Like in pieces.
Yeah, I just, like, there was so, I've never seen a thing like that in a Saw movie before, but he fucking pees himself right there.
But it does also make you think somebody else has to have peed themselves on a Saw trap at some point.
Surely, yeah. Well, the thing is, like, isn't the whole, I don't know if it's like a myth or not, but like when you die you shit yourself, or you like evacuate
it's
your bowels,
like your body's like muscles all relax, so if you have something there that the muscles were holding in, it's just gonna come there. Out It'll,
yeah probably same with pee. That's probably what happened to Hank here. He was like, he probably needed to pee. Also, I was thinking to myself last night, I wonder how well Will would have done against Lee Pace from Bodies.
Oh, he's got the biggest lungs. Yeah, Lee Pace has big lungs. Yeah, no, Will would have, he would have been out right away.
Yeah.
And then Lee Pace is just like, what's going on? I'm a veterinarian. I treat animals. Our insurance covers cancer.
Yeah. I can just see him having a good time, and it's just like, yeah, this is great, right? Yeah.
Pit, I love dogs.
Yeah. I'm a vet. Yeah. Terminator, I love that movie.
Have you seen the second one? Arguably even better.
Some would say. People are talking.
I feel like Lee Pace would like be very firm on the side of, no, it's better.
I want to see him in a Saw movie.
Okay.
So he wins.
Yeah. Long story short.
Yeah.
So we cut to a mom and her son are in a cage with a gigantic vat of hydrofluoric acid, arguably more than is necessary for how this movie ends.
He really, really wanted William to fucking die.
Like, I want to make sure they know.
Yeah. I guess it's dripping in the cage with him. He's like, yeah, that's what that shit's going to do to somebody. And also, another case of we don't get their names until the end. We don't even get the son's name the entire time. I just wrote mom and son the entire
time. Yep, that's how I refer to them. And they've got a lever next to the vat that says live or die.
Live or die. Make your choice.
So it cuts to Pamela. She's at Jill's apartment. And she gives her something. She's like, this is at the location where John's body was found. And Jill's just kind of like slams the door. So Pamela starts to walk over to the elevator, which if you are in a Saw movie, never go to the elevator.
Especially if it doesn't
work.
It's a
bad time.
Yeah, because it's not working. It's like, okay, well, obviously.
Avoid elevators.
If anything
which
like
is
that,
what I do in life in general anyway, because I don't trust elevators, but especially in a Saw movie.
Right, yeah. Yeah, you're going to get pignapped if something like that is failing to work, or if you just go into an elevator. That's like prime pignapping location right there.
Yeah, so she gets in the elevator, it doesn't work, she gets out, and guess what happens? She's pignapped.
Yep. I wonder if it was Jill. No, it's not.
Wouldn't that be funny?
Seriously, like I feel like she would have had to have been the one pignapping, right? Didn't like John show her the way of Pignap.
Like, John has been taking her to, like, Krav Maga classes or something. He's like, it's just for you to learn self-defense, Jill, that's all. But, like, secretly, he's actually training her.
Yeah, like, grooming her to be the next Jigsaw.
Yeah,
the
he's Jill like saw. Mr. Miyagi. Like, she doesn't know that this is actually training for Pignapping. She thinks she's just learning Krav Maga for self-defense. So William gets his first little band off his wrist. Like, he gets the bomb off, and then he's like, fuck this strap also. So he takes it off. It's apparently a lot harder to take off than the bomb, which is surprising in a lot of ways. But he does, and underneath it is written "The Party," which part of me, it took me a second. I was like, is that tattooed on him?
I know. Like, why it was so important about the party?
Well, because that's where we get the flashback, right, and that's right. Where Will and John met.
Yep. So this is where Will is explaining the formula to John that he devised.
A very simple formula, which I say every time, and it, because I always forget that the next line is going to be like, it's actually pretty complicated.
Yeah.
It's beautiful every time it happens, and I always forget it's going to happen.
He condenses it in a way. It's just like, yeah, just like, I don't know.
It sounds like pretty basic actuarial science.
Yeah.
What do I know?
I can't.
I don't know much about actuarial science, but it feels like it's probably a pre-existing formula.
He's just so smugly proud of it in the scene, though.
He really is.
And I like John calling him. I was like, all right, so you basically determine who lives or dies because of that. And he's like, well, not really. It's the formula that does it. But like, you made the formula.
Yeah, it's the formula of who has the potential to live. And it's like, and he's like, well, it doesn't count who has the will to live. And yeah, definitely there are cases of people that have a lot of shit going on and they keep chugging along.
They refuse to die. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So they're at a zoo. And I was like, are they at an old reptile exhibit? Because it's got like the little reptile things. And you were like, I don't know, maybe. And later we see a door that says zoo personnel. And I was like, ha 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 ha.
This, like, when you did that and then when we found out it actually was a zoo, it made me realize, I just kind of blindly accept that these crazy locations exist where they're able to set the shit up.
Because we never really know where Sawville exists.
Sawville? You know, dude, that's totally the name of the town, too. It's like Tromaville.
Yeah.
Sawville.
Sawville. We don't know where it exists, but we know that there's a ton of derelict buildings that are just sitting empty. Unless you need to set a fire, then they're not empty.
Dude.
That's what we know about Sawville.
Sawville is the name of the prequel story, like Smallville for Superman, but it's like John Kramer as a little boy growing up.
I want the same actor who plays...
Who plays
Clark Kent. I want him to play young John Kramer.
Like, as an old person?
Yeah.
Oh, you know, it might line up. Like, I don't know, actually, John Kramer's not that old here.
Yeah, well, because we talked about this, Tobin Bell has looked since he was about 45 years old, so. Yeah. Okay, so he sees these handles that say take them, and he says, fuck that, and starts to walk away, but then his wristband beeps, so he's like, okay, well, I guess I can't fuck that. So he grabs them, and he has to choose between his secretary and his file clerk. His secretary has a husband and kids and lots of cute family photos, and his file clerk is apparently alone in the world and sits on benches by himself all the time.
Pictures of himself. He's just so pouty. He's just so dramatic. It almost feels like they were professionally done.
Yes.
Like he's posing for them.
These are the nicest spy photos I've ever seen.
Like, this guy...
I'm on a bench. I'm eating a sandwich.
Yeah,
but so sad. I'm walking to my apartment. I am sad, for I am alone in the world. Marry a friend to my name.
Do you think Adam took these pictures?
Absolutely.
I feel like Adam had to have taken these.
This is right before Adam died, and he was like really getting into his art. Like, he was like, I'm going to make this yeah. super moody.
It's like art house shit. That's the one day he was developing in his black room.
Yes.
Yeah. So ridiculous. Also, the Billy puppet swings down and like hits the window.
Yeah, it's frightening.
And it's lip synced.
Yeah,
he lip synced the fucking tape. That's gonna take time.
Billy lip synced for his life. Sashay, you say, file clerk Shantae away.
Wow, well done.
Thank you. So yeah, basically he keeps pulling and pulling until he has to choose one or the other or neither, or maybe his arms get ripped out of his socket, much like when Talia sees a squirrel on a walk.
Mm-hmm.
And he ends up choosing his secretary, even though by his formula, the file clerk would have been the one to get the coverage.
Do you think he would have chosen a different thing if he had happy pictures? Like, all the pictures are so sad, they were just bumming him out. He's like, I'm doing you a favor, man.
He's got a sandwich and maybe he's like sharing it with a bird.
Yeah,
and then he's
right.
Like, oh, that's sweet.
Yeah, he's making the birds happy. Yeah.
But that's not what happens. And the file clerk dies, and then the secretary is back on her platform, but she is leaning so far forward, it is frightening.
She will die if
she
falls.
I'm like, what if she just slips?
And I like how Williams just like, just find a way to get down. I'll, you know, whatever.
I got shit to take care of. You know, this is how we work together anyway. It's fine.
Yeah, so she's probably like still standing there by the time the series unfolds.
Yeah, nobody else knows that she's there.
Yeah, it's like a fucking zoo. Yeah, she's the only one I think that survives. Oh, no, there's like two other people.
Two in the dog pit, but they don't give a shit about her.
No, they don't. No.
Okay, right. So Pamela is in a similar cage to the mom and son, but she's, instead of a lever, she's got a tape.
Yes.
And the tape is basically like, hey, you're sensationalizing my life. That's pretty fucked up.
Oh, you
and
mean she's doing like, her job?
Yeah. Also like, hey, you murder people for fun.
Yeah, right.
And act like it's a moral high ground. Don't talk about sensationalization. So Hoffman gets a call from Erickson.
Yes.
They found the Baxter tape. He's like, there's something I need to talk about you in person. It's time sensitive. And he's like, I'll be right there. Meanwhile, Jill is in a building. And it looks like maybe it's a hospital, which makes sense because she works in a clinic. So it's fine. She drops off an envelope. And we get a flashback to Hoffman with the body of Timothy from Saw 3.
Mm-hmm.
And he's readjusting something, and John comes in and says a lot of engineering bullshit that I'm not sure if it's actually factually correct.
I don't know, but apparently he was like, they were like, Hoffman was doing some last second tinkering to it, and Amanda calls him out on it for doing it. I don't know why, and apparently John has some issues with it as well.
Yeah, and then Hoffman like dumps Timothy's body, and he's like, that's John's like, that's a human being. And it's like, you've never treated them like human beings, John. Calm down.
John, you're about to twist this dude's neck.
Yeah.
Like, come on. Don't get the high ground on this one right here.
Yeah, and he's like, you want to see this guy suffer as much as I do, because that's not what we're here for. And then him and Amanda are like arguing, and she's like, I'm not going anywhere.
He's like, sure about that?
And then Jill appears, and she's asking John to stop. And he's like, I promise that when this is all said and done, there will be a way out for you.
With each movie, more and more people are added to Saw 3. Isn't that crazy? Like, now Jill is there, too.
We never knew Saw 3 would be the apex for all of it. I do appreciate that they're bringing it back to, like, the last one written by Lee Whannell.
Yeah, that's, yeah, they're like, okay, we gotta, like, keep going back to that
Respect. Yeah. Under the second band is another tattoo. This is Final Decision. And there's a flashback to John appealing his cancer treatment. There's a doctor in Norway who has gene therapy. Keep this in mind for a few movies from now. And then Will's like, your doctor, your primary care physician, Dr. Gordon, Lawrence Gordon, a doctor.
A doctor, yes.
He didn't recommend this treatment. And John's like, that guy's a specialist. He doesn't give a shit. Like, yeah. He just wants...
He's got his hand on the doorknob on, like, halfway through the door, whatever. I fucked that up. But he's like, he doesn't even really care. He's just there to, like, say shit and leave.
Which, like, some specialists are fantastic. I've got a couple that are just absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
And then some are absolutely like that.
Well, you saw in the first movie, he sucked. He did have terrible bedside manners.
Oh, absolutely. He's awful.
Yeah, you could tell he didn't really give a shit about people.
Yeah. So he's like, if you seek this treatment, you will be in breach of contract and we will be forced to terminate your entire policy. And John says, like, one of the few things I've ever fully agreed with him, where he's like, I understand now that decisions aren't being made between doctors and their patients. They're being made by the fucking insurance companies. Here's the thing. Insurance was originally developed because there was concern about doctors taking advantage of their patients, like ordering unnecessary tests, unnecessary treatments just to line their own pockets. Mm-hmm. So insurance came along as kind of a middleman to make sure that the things that were happening were necessary. But this has become corrupt because capitalism corrupts absolutely.
Yeah, it's like they charge outrageous prices because insurance is going to pay most of it and justify the price kind of, but like they all make bank off of it because of that.
Yeah, which is why if you go out of network for some reason and it's not covered, you're charged $50 for a Band-Aid.
It's so stupid. Yeah. Yeah, supplies are ridiculously overpriced. It's it's dumb.
And then Piranha.
Yeah, I love.
He goes through this whole rampage, and you're like, I actually find myself agreeing with John Kramer. Piranha.
Oh, okay. Like, he builds it up. He, like, it's right after. It's like, it's the fucking insurance companies. And then the music cue stops. It's like, Piranha. And it's just like, whoa, okay. Yeah. You went a little bit too far there, buddy.
And I'd be lying if I'd say that we haven't glommed onto that as, like, a thing that we just like to say. The inside of my glasses are engraved with the word Piranha. We've got multiple Piranha paintings around our house. Yeah. Granted, some of those are from Piranha 3D, but still.
That's true. But it's just hilarious. Like, that, I don't understand that. Like, I get it. He's saying that they are Piranha, but, like, Piranha. Piranha. But it's just so, and the shot after that of him just like staring at the fish tank, and it's just like a bunch of like piranha just swimming around, and it's just like,
how
okay, John, buddy.
How excited do you think John Kramer would be to know that in 2024 you can play Super Smash Bros. As a piranha plant?
Oh, dude, he would love it. that's his character. That's yeah. He's a piranha plant main.
Okay, so where are we at with this? Oh, he goes to the furnace room. And basically, the lawyer that he had, William had spoken with at the beginning, is Debbie. Down there. Yeah, she's got to go through kind of a maze, but not really. Some of it has steam, and some of it she can, like, spider monkey climb around. But some of it, he's got to, like, pull a lever and take the steam to his face.
Yeah.
And this is hot steam. This is not even just, like, oh, man, hot steam. Like, there's flames coming from it.
Yeah,
still,
like,
so.
It's, like, melting your skin.
Yeah,
steam.
It's not. It doesn't feel good.
No.
So he's doing this. He has taken a lot of heat for her. She is not in any way, shape, or form understanding that he is being hurt for her. And then she gets to the end. She climbs up, and he's like, look for a key, look for a key. And she sees an x-ray and photos where William has a cut on his ribs. That the first time I saw this, I thought he just like got cut by the like lung machine at
yeah,
the beginning.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
But actually what happened is he was cut open and a key was put inside of him, because that's John Kramer's favorite fucking thing in the
yeah,
world.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, this is classic Saw right here.
He's like, keys in bodies. Come on, people.
Cut them open.
So I imagine Patrick Melton and Marcus Dunstan were like writing this, and Lionsgate was like, so you guys did a really good job on Fife. It was really great. Very inventive traps, but we do need to talk to you about something.
It's like,
you didn't have any keys inside of any person.
Yeah, where's the key page? Like, yeah. You know, like I thought that, you know, this is a Saw movie, right?
Yeah.
So you, I have a key in a body at some point.
Yes. So we're going to need you to correct that. And if you can add a buzzsaw to it just for like a little flair, that'd be great. And then maybe an unrealistic time constraint to get to it. And they were like, bet.
So
we get this.
You pretty much wrote it for us right there. Yes. Okay, we'll throw in some steam and it'll be fine. Yeah.
Yeah. So she grabs the buzzsaw and she like starts to go after him. He's like, what's the thing? He's like, he was sitting there when he realized it at the same time as her. He was like, okay, I can do this. Let me figure this out. And he's like kind of looking around like, oh, fuck, I don't want to cut myself open, but I'm going to save Debbie.
Yeah. And Debbie's like, I'm going to fucking kill you.
Yeah. And Debbie's like, fuck William.
Yep.
Except she's not fast enough. Like, he punches her a couple of times. Like, you can tell it's not a punch he feels good about. Like, he's like, just get him.
Stop it.
Stop.
Ow.
I have this thing lately where I like to watch horror movies, and when they're going like, no, stop it. I like to do it like they're flirting. Like, no, stop.
Debbie. Come on.
Debbie, you're being ridiculous. So yeah, he punches her and she falls and gets pierced in her brain. So
stop. Yep, she did.
Yeah.
Okay, so Hoffman is told the voice on tape doesn't match John Kramer's.
Wait, first the son in the cage is like, maybe the test is pulling the lever and they want to see what we're supposed to be doing, because there's a timer going on, like they're watching us.
Oh yeah, and Pam sees the camera of the game being played, so yeah. She's seeing everything going on.
She's got
on.
A little button. She can toggle between screens.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. Yeah. I would be afraid to press any button if I were them, but she's just like starting pushing buttons willy-nilly. She doesn't care.
Okay, so yeah. Hoffman finds out there's an abnormality in Strom's fingerprint. There's Freon on it. And they're like, we don't know if it was there peri or postmortem, so we got to figure that out. Also, we almost have the voice on the Baxter tape descrambled. It doesn't match John Kramer, so let's go to the lab. They've almost got it.
Yes.
Jill puts envelope number 6 in her purse, along with something big and satin and red.
Ooh, wonder what that is.
Only the best. Mm. Only the best for John Kramer's surviving ex-widow. I don't know. So the dog fits in a carousel. How long were they spent? So he gets to the door. He hears them arguing. And he's like, hello? And they're like, Mr. Easton! They're so ready to, like, lick his entire asshole.
Dude, it's ridiculous.
Even, they like, would've... they're kidnapped. Pignapped. Mm-hmm. Fully pignapped and trapped. And they're still, like...
Dude, he could have done that. Just, like, put his butt up there on the carousel and they would all like, would have a
he's
turn.
He's like, I will save you from the shotgun blast if you literally kiss my asshole.
All 6 of you, yeah.
Yeah. I will save you twice if you put your tongue in there.
I don't know how it's going to happen, but I'm going to save all of you guys if you guys do this.
We mark these episodes explicit by nature because of what we're talking about. But I just talk about a tongue and an asshole. This really, is extra explicit today.
This is a way for us to like evaluate ourselves right here. We are talking about like an asshole literally being kissed because of a saw trap.
Yeah. Where are we at?
Yeah, we're weird.
So how long were they spinning?
I don't know. Like the entire time. Because like I feel like...
I was watching that and I was like, oh my God, I feel sick just thinking about sitting in the dark.
The clock. Okay, I think at least 40 minutes has passed.
Oh my God.
Because this is the last one.
And it's like... not a super slow spin, but not a super fast spin. So it's just enough that, like, I like thinking about it, I feel the equilibrium in my brain being.
Yeah, because you already start to, like, lose your sense of balance. So, like, does that make you dizzy if you're in pitch blackness?
Yeah, it's almost like quasi sensory deprivation.
Yeah, really.
So he goes in there, and basically, there's a shotgun with 6 bullets. He can save 2 of the 6 that are there.
Yeah, by doing that, he sticks his hand in the thing and he gets like a little stab into his wrist.
So here's the thing. I get that John was trying to like talk about the blood on his hands, choosing who lives and dies.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm like, you're also kind of giving him a martyr complex because it's very Stigmata-esque as well.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, this could go either way. Like, yeah. What if he comes out the other side of the, like, say he doesn't get his intestines turned into pink foam. Say that doesn't happen. Is he going to come out and think he's like insurance Jesus or something?
It's like the formula works.
Yeah.
Yes.
So anyway, they all start like... they're all kissing his ass, and then when they realize only 2 can be saved, they immediately turn on each other, and they're, like, talking about why they should either be saved or why the other people shouldn't be saved. So the Terminator, he's like, I'm your best guy, you need me, which is not a very convincing personal argument.
No.
But he doesn't know that William has been through 3 life-changing games already and is already starting to become a better person. He thinks he's still just the asshole insurance senior VP. So he's like, I'm your best guy. If he had seen the rest of the tapes, if he had the little tape switcher thing like Pamela, maybe he'd like appeal to his deeper sense
like,
of person.
Well, he's like, I'm the best guy. All right, he's dead. Next up.
The one woman is like, I've got 2 kids. Please, you know them well. They need me. And it appears that that does actually get to him. So he's like, okay.
All right.
Yep. Save the mama. Not the mama. Ooh, I'm in a weird place today. One is saying, like, I'm the only person who can take care of my parents. They need me. And then he's like
sounds like a pre-existing condition to me. All right, next person.
One says that she's no, the blonde one, the one with the parents, she actually ends up surviving.
No, one of the girls dies. So there's 3 girls.
Yeah, the younger one who says she's pregnant. Everybody else is like, nope, she's lying. She's absolutely not pregnant. She clearly came up with that after she saw the parent thing work.
Yeah, because like,
or the I'm a parent thing.
You would be leading off with that if that were the case. Mm-hmm. But she's like, I'm pregnant. And it's like a light bulb comes on in her head. You can hear it.
One of the other men, they were like, he's stealing from the company. So kaboom. So he ends up saving the blonde woman and the other guy dies. Fuck, I didn't write his name down.
I don't think he has a name, does he?
I feel like he's got a name.
Maybe his name is Henry.
We have talked about him briefly before on the show.
Urban Legend.
On Urban Legend. So he chews the scenery, spits it back out, scoops it up, pours it into his own mouth, Mama Bird style, chews it back up again, spits it out. He kills this monologue. I love it.
He got the breakout role in this movie right here. This right here was his time to shine, and he used it.
You know, Costas watched the dailies, and he was like, fuck!
Yeah, God.
He's like, nobody's going to think of Costas in this movie when this guy gets this
He's
monologue.
Like, all right.
His monologue was actually like 10 times longer, and Costas like, you got to edit that down.
Yeah, cut that. No, he will, like, he does a great job in this. I love it so much. You look at me when you're killing me. And then he was like, right before the shot, he's like, ho.
Yeah.
He just gets killed. Oh, man.
Yeah. It's,
and then they're still.
I love this. And they're still spinning. Yeah,
insult to injury. They're still, all right. It would be hilarious if the, like, the lights turned out. It's like, all right, back to darkness. Yep. Still spinning. Now you just have bodies beside you now.
Okay. So we cut to the lab and we get that infamous line, right now you're feeling helpless. And it's becoming descrambled. And I don't know if they're actually descrambling anything or if they're just trying different things.
I feel like, because, like, for the longest time, I didn't understand this, but you made it clear to me that they knew that it was Hoffman at this point, and they were just trying to get him there. I feel like she had already descrambled it before. She's just fucking with the audio.
Yeah.
And waiting for the cue because they're like, so this right here, this isn't adding up. This isn't adding up. And then she's like, yeah, and this right here too.
Right now, you're feeling helpless. And then, boom, he throws the coffee in Perez's face.
So awesome.
And then he slits Erickson's throat. And then Perez goes to shoot Hoffman. And Hoffman grabs the tech that was descrambling the audio, uses her as a human shield. And he comes up and he goes, stab, 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 into Perez's tummy. And she goes, everybody knows. And he goes, you're a liar.
Oh, God, yeah. I love that exchange. He's like, who knows? She's like, everybody's like, you lie. And then just, like, drops her.
Yeah, and then he goes to his car, gets the hand that he's been told already doesn't leave good prints, and decides he's going to do it anyway, and then he sets the place on fire.
Which is, like, I feel like that's just, like, a compulsion that he has. He's like, anytime he, like, kills somebody, he's like, all right, and Strom's hand? And
he
Strom's
doesn't hand? Have a backup plan.
Yeah.
Like, he did not know what else to do.
Or maybe he just, like, he's like, oh, he's doing a mid, like, patting Strom's hand on him. He's like, oh, shit, this didn't work last time. He's like, all right, I'm just going to burn the place. You know, whatever, I don't fucking care. And that insult to injury here again, Erickson is still alive, and, like, he notices Erickson kind of, like, groan a little bit and nudge, and then he just starts pouring gasoline on his face. It's like, all right, you're gonna die.
Jill gets to the zoo and she sees where the game monitor is on, and she leaves a note, the same note that Pamela Jenkins gave her. Some pulls the lever in the cage and it does nothing. Like, they try both live and die, nothing happens, and the mom goes, I think I know what it is, and she sets it back to neutral, and it's like, say more.
Yeah, come on.
Say more, Tara. So Hoffman sees the note, and then this is where we get the flashback to him leaving it for Amanda. Basically, the reason Amanda kills Lynn is because Hoffman was blackmailing her. She was with Cecil the night that Jill's baby was killed.
Little Gideon.
Yeah. So he was like, you either kill Lynn or I'm going to tell John the truth. And so Amanda kills him, and, you know, all of this. And so because Hoffman is a slow processor, he's sitting there reading it, trying to figure out what it means, and then he gets zapped, much like Weeman and Jackass 2.
Yeah. Yeah. Jill walks in, she's got the taser.
The throwing machine is rigged.
Yeah. Yeah, so Jill's got him tased. Then we cut back to Will. He's arriving at the end of the game just in time.
Yeah, he gets there 1 second.
Yeah.
1 second. It says his family is this way. And what we didn't point out earlier was that Tara and her son.
Tara is mom, by the way.
Yeah, Tara is mom. When they woke up in there, he's like, why are we here? And she's like, because of your father. So we're led to believe that that's his family.
Yeah.
But, and then he sees the signs of his family in here. He runs in. He sees Pamela and he goes, Pamela, and a ding dong, my sister from another mister. We're here. We're reunited. It's all great. And then Tara and her son are like, oh, you're the asshole who killed our dad.
Mm-hmm. And then we get the flashback of Mr. Abbott going over to console the family and break the news that he's not going to get the coverage. And yeah, they all made eye contact with William and they're like, all right, this fucking asshole.
So Jill ties Hoffman up to the chair with some belts, some leather belts, as you do in Sawville.
Yes.
And then he puts him in the reverse bear trap. That's what was hidden under the rich red satin in her purse.
It was also in the case that was left in the will, too, in the box, when the guy's like, it's none of my business, but what is that? She's like, yeah, it's a fucking reverse
saw. Yeah, we're not talking about it.
Bear trap.
Not your business. Yeah,
whatever.
You're correct. Not your business. Mm. He was envelope number 6, the one she kept for herself.
Yes.
So Tara has a chance. She can either spare Will or she can exact her revenge. And she's like, I'm not doing this because you killed my husband. I'm doing this because I can live with myself if I let you do this to another family. But she can't do it. Because she, like, realizes what the implication of everything is, and she's just like, I can't do it. And then the son, who has to be, like, 16 or 17, has no impulse control, doesn't fully understand the consequences of what he's about to do, says, I can. You killed my dad, you asshole. And he pulls it, and then seafoam pink bubbles come out of William, and he dies.
I liked your thought on that last night, though, where you said, like, it was, like, a backup plan, because, like, John, that's
why, because there was no need for the son to be in there.
John really wanted this guy to die, so he had like a failsafe in case she didn't do it. The son was going to do it because he's definitely going to want revenge.
He wanted Will to suffer and die. Like, it was never about teaching him a lesson. Yeah, exactly. As much as he likes to pretend that's what he's doing, it was never about that.
Yeah, fuck this guy. This guy fucking sucks.
Yeah. Then Costas breaks his hand.
With the fucking trap, man. Yeah. That's very creative. Like, oh, God.
Yeah, they were ready to cut on Costas, and he's like, hold on, hold on. And then he, like, actually breaks his hand in real life.
You know, and thinking like about this, this makes his fucking tear that he goes on in the next movie that much more impressive, because he's doing it with a broken hand.
Well, it makes the fact that he undoes the other side of his strap with his broken hand even more impressive.
Yeah.
So he does it. He goes up to the window, which fortunately is one of those security windows that's got the bars in it. So when the trap opens, it doesn't actually explode his head.
Yeah, just a little bit. And then he rips it off. And then he gets on his knees and he goes, yeah! And then that's the end of the movie.
Mm-hmm. Fuck, this movie is great. I'm keeping it a 9.5. That's the correct score for this movie.
I am too. I love this one as a Saw movie. It hits all of the right spots.
Absolutely. Talia slept through the whole thing, but to be fair, she's seen this movie multiple times. Mm-hmm. I think Talia's going to give it a 10 out of 10 for the dog pit.
Oh, yeah, the dog pit. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah, dog pit, people yelling, spinning in the dark, all of her favorite things involved.
Yeah.
And Zoe was present for the entire movie. She knew there was going to be explosions. She knew all kinds of things were going to happen. So she was very excited about it.
Yeah, she was very thrilled.
Okay. Who did you relate to?
I relate to the sad guy taking the pictures, because if people ever took pictures of me eating my lunch at work, I would, they'd be like, what's wrong with it? Like, I like to like be alone on my lunch, because like I used to have to like be around and talk to people all the time, so I wanted to like have some like my like me time, and people would probably be like, wow, he's so lonely, he's so sad, he's eating that sandwich all by himself. But like, yeah, if somebody ever took a picture of me, if Adam was ever getting artsy and wanted to take a picture of me eating lunch with my sad oatmeal, that's what it would be. It'd be me.
I relate to one particular line from John. Not John as a whole, but just where he's like on that tirade and then he goes, piranha, because I've definitely done that before. Got really distracted by fun things.
And you just like had to piranha. Make a comment. Yeah, yeah. I feel like he wasn't actually making like a comparison between piranha and...
Yeah, it wasn't companies. Any deeper. It was just like, there's a piranha. Yeah. Okay.
All right. No dream sequel, since it's our franchise.
But we do need to ask ourselves, which trap do we think we'd survive?
Yeah, which trap? So let's review the traps. You got the Hank trap.
Well, we got the beginning one.
The beginning one, yes, with the pound of flesh. Then you got the crushed lungs with you breathing.
I definitely couldn't do that one.
Yeah, you would fail at that one hard.
Yeah, yeah.
Then you got, is your life sad or is your life normal? Oh, I don't know if I would do good with that one, because I had the sad pictures.
Are you going to die alone, or are you going to leave a sad family behind you?
Yeah. Then you got the dog pit, you got the carousel. Am I going to be able to sell myself? That's the one right there. You have to be good at giving elevator pitches, because you got to give your pitch real quick to survive.
Dude, I could survive that one and be like, I've got Talia at home. You've met her. I've told you so many stories. She's amazing. Oh, think about what she'd do without me. And William would be like, fuck, that's a great dog.
So, yeah, dog insurance.
I covered that dog's treatment. Yeah. I'm obviously going to make sure she's got her mom.
That dog's a good girl. That dog passes my formula. All right.
Yes.
You're saved. And then is that the last one?
Then there's the live or die, which isn't really like a...
No, it's not really. It's just like, am I going to survive a temperamental teenager? I don't think so.
No, nobody survives a temperamental teenager who's been through trauma.
Okay, well, I think I could do the hold my breath one. I think that's the one I feel the most confident at. Because you're right with the Talia one, but I feel like I would fuck it up. Like under pressure.
Me and my wife take care of my dog. Fuck, I shouldn't have mentioned that. I have somebody else to take care of her.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. I have a review.
All right. Oh, wait. Tagline.
Oh, tagline. That's right.
Yeah, we got to do a tagline.
Okay. Right, so, yeah, he saved me. So I feel like I want us to have a really good tagline to meet how good this movie is.
Yeah. Saw six.
The outcome of the game has been ensured.
that. You gotta spell it wrong though, like ensured.
Yeah. Absolutely. I was gonna say that's not even how it's spelled, but that's how we've got to spell it.
Yeah. Totally. I love that. That's great.
Okay.
Yes. All right. Internet review.
This one's kind of a longer one, and I didn't want to. I don't want to read the whole thing, but it had some different points that we don't always see. So this is a 2 out of 10. It was an IMDb user review.
Okay.
The scenes that aren't torture porn are edited so weird that it makes it difficult for me to sit through. Plus, the death labyrinth is shot with so many different colors this time that it makes it a little bit worse. Thinking back at how drastic the camera work, editing, and color palettes were almost makes me queasy. This one survives almost exclusively on the brutality of the opening and closing dismemberment sequences. Also, there's almost no explanation for the opening people, and it just goes to show how much of a mess this one was. Also going hard on the Jigsaw vigilante nonsense in this one. A few films ago, they switched from Jigsaw victims being poor people, addicts, and depressed people to more elaborate, immoral folks, culminating in the targets for this film being a health insurance company. Kind of a quick shift in morality from John Kramer, but I guess that despite the convoluted revisions, the studios actually have no idea what they're doing with the character and his ethics.
Interesting. I don't necessarily... I feel like that's like a natural progression for his character.
Yeah, I think... Because that's the thing. His morality was already corrupted because he, like, truly has no empathy for other people. He thinks he does, but he doesn't. Because in his head, well, I've never dealt with depression. If you're depressed, you're weak. Yeah. I've never dealt with addiction. If you're addicted, you're weak. That's, like, his whole thing. So now it's shifted from, like, okay, well, I think you're despicable because I personally can't relate to you, to you have actually personally harmed me. And honestly, it did start... Lawrence Gordon, a doctor... was his doctor.
Yeah.
And he was there in the very first one.
Mm-hmm. Well, also, like, it feels like the first ones were, like, it was more smaller scale. But once he got more comfortable and he started building a team, he's like, all right, we're going to tackle corporations. Like, fuck these guys. Let's try and make change
and, like,
up
even,
at the high level.
Even in the second one, like, yeah, they were all, like, low-level criminals, but they were there specifically to get Wahlberger riled up.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Make him worried about his son. So, like, it's always been personal for John.
I will agree, though, the coloring in the movie is kind of all over the place. Yeah. We've talked about that earlier. And the flashback. Are kind of insane. It is kind of hard to tell what's going on.
And I will say, I love how over the top this movie is. I love how over the top the later ones get and that they're more and more absurd. I also understand the people that saw the first one were like, wow, this is a really great mystery thriller horror movie.
And then we get this.
And this was a recent review. I think this is somebody, because this was like October of 2023.
Oh, wow.
When this review was left.
So they're getting ready for somebody, socks.
Yes. I think that's exactly what happened. Is they're like, I haven't seen any of these. Let's go through them. And they're like, what the fuck?
Yeah. And I do feel like the opening scene was definitely just there for Tanedra. For her to have her breakout role.
Yeah, it's like they had that scene written and they wanted to make sure that they could do whatever they needed to do with whoever won the show in case they didn't like her.
Yeah, because I mean, it is an entirely different business. It's like a bank's loaning, like, people, like, or not necessarily banks even, but just like people loaning people money to take advantage of them in their time of need. And then you go to insurance, which is almost a similar thing, but it's not exactly
like if it had been like that really racist contestant had won and then we're like, we need to write her out of this movie as quickly as possible.
Which one? There's like a couple of really racist contestants in that show.
That's true.
Yeah. Okay. I can get it.
Okay.
All right. So we got some listener reviews.
Yay.
All righty. So let's get into them. I had something just come in, so I don't know if it's related to this. Nope.
Okay.
I'm just talking about Would You Rather.
Okay.
All right. So we will start off on Twitter.
Twitter.
We have Lord Zombie. I've always liked the saws where there are groups working out the traps, like an escape room. That's what made the two good. So this right here, it's kind of like a group thing. in a way. Like, I don't know. It's a single person tackling them on, but also like work related people.
Yeah. I feel like they get even more into this with the, like, we've seen this a few times, like in the third one, because the judge follows slow ass motherfucking Jeff.
Mm-hmm, yep.
So he tags along. I think in the next one, we get a tag along for a minute. Maybe
in seven. Fuck. Yeah. What all happens in? What's
that's
this?
The one who lies about his game.
Yeah. Okay. I think we does, might. I can't remember.
Yeah, I can't remember. I
it definitely like, happens in five. Five. Does, that's a whole yeah. thing. Five. And yeah, then yeah. also in Jigsaw, mm-hmm. that's the thing in that one too.
Yeah. They all have to work together yeah. for that one. Yeah. So. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a recurring thing.
Yeah. And I agree. I do like when there's like more of an interpersonal element, like they all know each other or they have to figure out what they have in common.
Yeah, I like that too. Yeah. Like it made it more like the stakes seem more high whenever they have that connection.
More personal.
Yeah, exactly. And our final review over on Instagram from Michael E. Howard, who says, Saw 6 is one of my favorites. And I know I have said that before, but this is a whole lot of fun. From that very first trap, you know you're in for a ride. Someone give them a hand.
Oh.
There's a lot of closing up story arcs with Hoffman and Amanda. These traps are wild. I will never get over that carousel trap. Yikes. Many twists and turns in this one. 8.25 out of 10.
I do think it did a really good job of closing up Amanda's storyline, and I think that's important because we never really know why she chose to kill Lynn. We yeah. just know she read something, it upset her. It was very smart the way they wrote that to leave it open-ended in case it was explored later.
Yeah, for sure.
So I like that we finally get that reveal that we'd forgotten about almost.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So I guess that does it for this week's episode.
And that actually does it for January.
That does it for January.
Travis, do you have our first movie picked out for February yet?
Oh, man, I haven't really thought about it.
Okay, then.
I thought a little bit about it, but I don't know yet.
So then, everybody, that just means you got to pay attention to our socials for whenever we post our February schedule. This is one of those rare things that's probably not going to happen the rest of the time we have the show, which is where we're going to have five episodes in February.
Yeah, the shortest month.
Yeah, because of the leap year and where the month starts, we actually happen to get five Thursdays.
It's insane. Yeah.
So just be on the lookout for that. You can find us on social media on Twitter and Blueski at Least Fave Pod, and on Instagram and Threads at Least Favorite Scary Movie Podcast. We're also on Facebook, and we have a website, which is leastfavoritescarymovie.com. You can email us at leastfavoritescarymovie@gmail.com, or if you want to like support the show financially, you can DM us on Patreon too.
Yeah,
and you could be like the cool people, Joe
Freakatron,
as is his name, Amber and Michael, who support the show financially, help us keep the website going, get new equipment. We got some special equipment coming in today. Not going to talk about that yet, but if you're a patron or a future patron, wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Got some stuff coming.
Yeah, be ready for that announcement coming out. And if you want to support us in non-financial ways that can really help us still, like with the algorithm and building our following, you can rate us, review us, and subscribe to us, because all of those do good things for us on our platforms.
Absolutely. It makes a big difference for us. And also, patrons, we will be putting out our vote for February's movie.
Yes.
Soon, budget level patrons. So.
Yes. That'll be coming out soon, as well your bonus episode, as I said at the beginning. Yes, so. Yeah.
So be on the lookout.
Yes, definitely be on the lookout for that. And let's get ready to get a little sensual.
Yeah. Oh, it's the love month.
It's the love month, baby.
We'll see what happens. We'll see. I get first pick. I get to set the tone for the month.
Yep.
We'll see.
Watch
what
out. It's a true Travis month, y'all.
Yeah, that's right, baby. So. And I get the Tubi.
And he gets the Tubi.
Fuck yeah.
Trace Travis.
Trace Travis is what they call me.
Yeah.
Not because I trace my drawings. That's not a good one.
Trace Travis, he traces everything.
No, I don't.
Yep.
No. All right. We'll see you guys later.
Yep. Until next time.
Bye. Piranha. I'm not reading.